I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. This is the Electric Drum. I'm Juan Castillo, and today I have with me in the studio Talib Sharif. He's president and imam of the Nation's Mosque, and we're here to talk about his life and, you know, and about Muslims in America. You know, of course, a lot of conversation in the news and, you know, and everywhere else about, you know, the role of Muslims here in America. How you doing, my brother?
Doing pretty good, Juan. It's an honor to be here on WYBC. Certainly an honor and a pleasure, and greatly appreciate the invitation.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about your early days. You said you were born in Manhattan, New York.
Yes.
And then you moved. Talk about those
early
days.
We were born in Manhattan, Lenox Hospital in Manhattan. I guess we lived there probably maybe 4 years, maybe five. My father was, the man that I knew as my father, I put it that way, was brutally murdered in Manhattan. And so my mother moved down south to Wilmington, North Carolina, which is where her mother was, and mm-hmm. most of the family was down south. So I actually started elementary school in Wilmington, North Carolina. And in Wilmington, North Carolina is where I really was introduced, I would say, to the language of Islam. And I give another story that I don't share with a lot of people. Certainly, you know, I'm saying the person I knew as my father at the time was murdered, so I didn't, and at that, I didn't have a father. So, you know, in the way human life goes, you know, we look for models. So at that time, my uncle became my model. He was a teenager, very outspoken, involved in a lot of things. But let me give you this piece. My mother remarried while we were down south. And shortly after being there, this person was apparently deranged. He tried to kill her. Mm. So domestic violence, you know, I was just young, five, six. You know, we jump on the back, grab a leg. We don't do anything.
Yes, sir.
And so one day it got really bad. And he really hurt her. And so, you know, she was able to get out of the house, me and my sister at the time. And so she took us to her mother's house. And this was in the projects, one of the better projects in North Carolina, in Wilmington. And so we went there. And, of course, after maybe, I don't know if this, I can't remember clearly if it was the same day or shortly after that. But I do remember at some point, this guy apparently must have come there and was casing the place with a rifle. Mm. And so he came crashing through the window. I guess he saw her, and this was the opportunity. And his mind was to kill her. He came crashing through the window and was getting ready to shoot my mother. I mean, it was a close range. But my uncle, now this is what I'm trying to tell you about how I'm just a young person. I think I may have been six, maybe seven, maybe at the time. I mean, I'm seeing this. You know, obviously I can't do anything. But just to see him, and he's a teenager, you know. And he actually goes towards this gentleman. I ain't going to call him a gentleman. I shouldn't have said that. But goes towards him. And he grabs the gun, the rifle, at the right moment, and he points it, pushes it down, and it goes off. And he shoots my mother in the leg, and the left leg was lined up right on her heart, so she would have been dead. Mm. And so he shot my mother in the leg. And then after my uncle did that, he pushed back, grabbed a chair, and hit him with a chair. And so he fled after that, you know. So that's some of the things that caused me to be endeared to this uncle. Now, this uncle, again, he's beginning to teach me martial arts and those kind of things. He was involved. He was going to the Y. He became very good at that. He ended up going into the Marines. Mm. And so he's talking about 60s now. So he goes in the Marines and comes back. And like many other Marines, veterans, period, particularly Vietnam, they come back and they're not treated well.
He went to Vietnam.
Went to Vietnam. And because he was in the thick of things, big thick of things, where he lost people, you know, the kind of stuff that.
Absolutely.
He's suffering right now from PTSD right now.
Yes, yes.
And but wasn't treated well, so got involved. He came back and caused a lot of the frustration. Like a lot of the stuff was going on, he got involved with Black Panthers. Mm-hmm. He became a leader. And down in Wilmington, North Carolina, I actually have an article from the newspaper with him in uniforms and everything. And then later on, he joined the Nation of Islam. And again, I'm following him. I'm taking him. Because he's my mentor, and so he takes me and introduces me to that, and just a youngster. So that's my introduction to Islam. Now, being in Wilmington, North Carolina, I was also there when the Wilmington 10 case.
Yes, big case.
In fact, because we know the history of that, it was time to integrate, and just like a lot of the cities in America, they didn't want to do that. They were slow to bring about the equality, et cetera. So you know, they brought Ben Chavis in, and this riot broke out. But we lived at that time on the main street when you come into the city of Wilmington, off the bridge.
Mm.
And so I remember tanks, you know, when this riot broke out and everything. I remember tanks coming down the street. And I remember my mother telling me, she said she was hollering at the screaming, saying, "Get down, get down, get down." And I just happened to listen, and I went down. And as soon as I went down, this big thing of tear gas, it would have hit me. Mm. Came through the window, man. And of course, so that was part of my frame of reference in terms of justice, the fight, et cetera, as a youngster. And so obviously now going and being a youngster in this movement called the Nation of Islam, because this is from during the time of Muhammad Ali, because yes. Malcolm had already passed then a young man seeing that, I began to look at the language and accept the language. Now, I didn't really accept the life right there. I'm just a young guy, you know.
Yes.
And it wasn't strong enough in terms of the youth, because it wasn't enough of the youth involved at the time. So I would go, but I didn't really commit. But that was my introduction right there. And I'll tell you how. Let me give you this piece. This is a good piece here, because you probably know I was in the military. I spent 30 years in the military.
Yes.
But this is what got me in the military. We know the movement, the Nation of Islam, and of course, what's important for the listeners to know, if they don't already know, is that this is the movement that made Islam permanent and established in America. There were other movements before that, but they didn't get the kind of mileage that this movement got to establish Islam in America. And because that's maybe another talk, we could talk about what was the big piece that made the difference, and that we can talk about that maybe another time, maybe if there's a question or something. But before 1975, and we know the Muhammad Ali story well with the military,
yes,
and the Supreme Court, the movement said you can't join the military. My uncle was a Marine, I mentioned. Now, my uncle, when he joined the Nation of Islam, of course, he was already frustrated anyway with how he was treated as a veteran. But then going to the Nation, then of course that service to the country was discredited completely, you know, and because of the Nation now, okay, because of their policy, not fighting, they don't stand up for you, why stand up, et cetera. And because the main thing was they didn't want to kill, they couldn't use guns.
Right.
We know that. But this is what happened. 75, when the Honorable Elijah Muhammad had passed, and again, I'm still young, I'm a teenager, his son takes over the community. And because Reverend we know Wallace begins to change things. And
yes.
He actually takes the community from the small circle, this is how we frame it, from a small circle of self and nationalism to a broader circle of oneness and humanity and universals.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, so what he does is, he does something at one of the biggest gatherings. He said, if you all won't pick it up, I will. And he's talking about the American flag.
Yes.
And he picked up the American flag. And it's a famous picture of him with that flag walking it, and the flag is waving. And he said, we have an obligation to support, defend, and protect our society.
Mm.
So he put us back in when the movement had us out in terms of being patriotic, et cetera, standing up for certain things, you know, although you can be patriotic and still be against some of what our government does. Now, I wasn't old enough to join the military, but my uncle, for some reason, credit was given to his service. And he felt good about that. I saw how that affected him. And on the strength of that, I was 2 years short of being old enough to join the military. But the way he brought that back to me, and being my mentor now, I want to tie this back in, this was my mentor too.
Yes.
He was helping me. I actually had other things that I wanted to do, but this helped focus me to go into the military. So in 1979, when I became old enough, I joined in 1979 and went into the Air Force. And of course, now the story from there goes in terms of I wasn't really living a Muslim life. I really didn't know what it was to be a Muslim other than just having some of the language, the teachings of the Nation.
And I want to get into that. Mm-hmm. This is Juan Castillo, and I'm speaking with Talib Sharif. He's the president and imam of the Nation's Mosque. And we're talking about his life, and we're talking about being a Muslim in America. You know, and his life is is what that's been about. You know, we're at the point now where, you know, he's ready to go to into the military. You know, his mentor had introduced him to Islam. You know, and now, you know, we're discussing further, you know, his development. And so let me ask this question. Now, you know, when Wallace Muhammad, you know, decided to move in a different direction, right? In terms of the teachings, right? Mm-hmm. Besides, you know, the fact that you know that he talked about embracing America and, mm-hmm. and embracing, you know, the military and mm-hmm. the fact that this was our country too, mm-hmm. right? In terms of some of the teachings, was there anything different that he did in terms of being able to accept other Muslims' faiths? You know, I mean, other Muslim sects. Into what
yes,
he was
well,
doing?
Well, exactly. Again, as I mentioned the expression, to go from the small circle to the bigger circle of
yes.
oneness and humanity, and he took us to the universal teachings of Islam.
Yes.
And we were connected now with the 1+ billion Muslims around the world
mm-hmm.
at that point, which before we identified with them in language, but not necessarily in practice and complete belief.
Right. So you decide to go into the service. So tell us about that. Tell us about that experience.
Okay, that was an experience. I went in, and when I went in, it took me to Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm a grown man for the first time now. I joined the military. That takes me to Washington, D.C. I get connected with this nation's monster that I'm leading right now.
Yes.
And that begins to update me on the language of where we are with the transition from the father to the son.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I actually want to live this religion, stand up for it. I didn't stand up before. I identified with it. I didn't stand up for it.
Yes.
And didn't really practice and live it. So now I'm in an environment now in the military that didn't have the accommodations.
Yes.
Okay. It wasn't popular. Now, but I want to say this, though, before I get into that, after he picked the flag up and made the move that he made in 1977, the military for the first time saw a significant increase in Muslims in the military.
Mm.
Now, it could be for two reasons, and I think there's a combination of both. Muslims did enter like I did. I was inspired. I did go in. But there were some who were already in who didn't identify. They had codes that you wouldn't know what they were. But codes changed. It was a code. At that time, it was code 48. They had a code that had no preference or a code that had other, et cetera. But the code 48 began to increase. But still, the military, you know, there were no chaplains. No places of worship for Muslims. No accommodations for, you know, we fast 30 days a month.
Yes.
And don't eat and don't drink. And then to be able to get off, we had our service, primary service on Fridays. Where
and
they
then
were
pray
used to.
Also daily,
and
right?
Praying, exactly. All of yes. that praying daily. You know, we had to pray and find broom closets, whatever, you know, because nothing accommodated at that time.
Yes.
So we had to, I'm one of the ones who was a pioneer. Now we have a lot, all those things I just mentioned. Now all those things are in place. And we're one of the ones who helped to pioneer some of those things.
So now, education is very big with you. You know, obviously, you know, you went to the University of Maryland, and you've been, you know, you've gone to other schools. Well, talk about education. Talk about how you, in addition to your faith, decided that mm-hmm. education was going to be something that you were going to strive for, and talk about that a little bit.
Well, education, really, that's the primary denominator in terms of bringing out the excellence that's in you. And, of course, one of the things that Elijah Muhammad said, that we had to say, you will never be equal to the white man until you get equal knowledge. And he said, if a man don't treat you right, what makes you think he's going to teach you right?
Mm.
Okay, so those are some of the things that I had heard and that stayed with me, that pushed me to seek more in terms of broadening myself and my package and my awareness and my thinking, et cetera.
Now, that, you know, and obviously credibility. I mean, you know, because education is not just about the knowledge you gain, but also the fact that, you know, you can prove that, you know, you stay consistent in doing something mm-hmm. for a period of time mm-hmm. and became proficient at it.
Yes.
You know, so that gives you credibility. And so now you were here, you know, a while back and to speak at CONCAT and you know, the talk was about being a Muslim in America, you know, and you know, issues about race, and obviously, you know, Muslims are catching hell today. You know, with the way things happen in the Mideast. 9/11 and so forth and so on, you know, it's a very difficult thing to go through, you know, if that is your religion. Talk about that.
Yeah, it's obviously things change after 9/11.
Yes.
Certainly they were on a certain track prior to 9/11. And I want to make a distinction for our listeners, and we represent both of these interests that I'm getting ready to mention right now.
Yes.
We've had where Islam was seen in the world as a black religion, you know, black Muslims. That was a title that was given.
Yes.
And they had a certain reputation here in America. And then there was also the extremists, mm-hmm. terrorists, Arabs, terrorists. These were two pictures. In fact, I have a book on the shelf I hadn't had a chance to finish called Islam Universal or Nationalistic and Terrorists. And, mm-hmm. and actually, it was my dissertation in college. And then my professor said I should turn it into a book, which that's my schedule hadn't allowed me to do that right now. But after 9/11, obviously what happened, this Islamic phobia really didn't hit, like the language didn't hit Islamic phobia until later on. Mm-hmm. But obviously that fear factor was there because people began, they didn't necessarily look at African-Americans because we really have had a legacy here from Malcolm, which really made things popular, Muhammad Ali being Muslim. They weren't really targeting African-American Muslims.
Right.
Okay, but they were targeting Arabs and even Sikhs who didn't know because the ignorance didn't let people know. But obviously we had gotten pulled in because we had the same label.
And, you know, it's interesting because I grew up in that era mm-hmm. and I remember the Sunni Muslims.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And you know, to some degree, you know, no one really knew the distinction, but you knew that these brothers were different.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And sisters, mm-hmm. you know. And so tell me, you know, from your perspective, you know, you're Muslim, you know, how do you go through your daily life? I mean, you know, you see all of this stuff that's going on, your experience, you know, and how you feel. Talk to the people about that.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously I'm a leader, certainly, yes. And we're national and we're international, and we're doing a lot of things right now on all of those stages, local, national, international. Right now, but certainly as a Muslim, as an individual Muslim, in terms of what we see, it disappoints us greatly.
Yes,
to see what we're seeing in terms of it hurts, it divides the country, it doesn't strengthen us, it weakens us, and I'm seeing how it's weakening us. The bigotry that we see happening right now, all of this is really, it came really. I'm in my position. Let me say this. Mainly, right now, leading the nation's march because of my military. I have the competence, but also my military piece because 30 years, my life was on the line for the country.
Yes.
Loyalty was questioned. Mm. And, of course, so this, and you said, how do I feel? I didn't put my life on the line. And I'm just an example of only one. Mm. And there are so many that put their life on the line during my time. And even before my time, we start talking about being an African American, they're both connected because we're seeing the same thing we're seeing now. Actually, you can say Arabs or others, they're the new black to some degree, you know?
And you know what's interesting about the fact, you know, you mentioned earlier, you know, first of all, I think the whole Middle East thing is coming up in the election. You know, we've even had some nonsense, you know, statements that we've had some of the folks make. You know, we had one in particular that talked about he would never like to have a Muslim, you know, as president of the United States.
Yes, yes.
You know, and he took a lot of heat for that, you know, had to retract after that.
So, yeah, right,
you know, but, you know, tell us about the religion, man. I mean, you know, I think that, you know, a lot of folks understand Christianity, you know, mm-hmm. the basic tenets, you know, to some degree.
Yes.
You know
yes,
what I mean?
Yes.
And the fact that, you know, you do the right thing, you know, and you're going to get into heaven, so to speak, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. You know, you treat people the same way you want to be treated.
Yes.
You know, there's the Ten Commandments, mm-hmm. you know, thou shalt not steal and yes. kill and yes. all these other yes. things, right?
Yes.
You know, but on the most part, America does not know mm-hmm. about Islam. Mm-hmm. Now, we know that, you know, your Bible is the Quran. Mm-hmm. You know, talk a little bit about that. I mean, I think that people need to hear what your religion is all about.
Yeah, I love to talk about that. Really, the Islam is really not to be seen by us to be different from Judaism or Christianity. It is seen to be a continuation and a complement and connected to what came before us.
Yes, sir.
And I say that to say that if people don't know, all of the prophets, almost 100% of the prophets mentioned in the Torah, or you could say Old Testament, and the New Testament are in the Quran. And let me give you something that people don't know as well. I'd like to get this story in terms of for them to see exactly how it is. There's a time in Islam. Islam is over 1,400 years old, 1,400 years. And there are one-third of the Earth's population really are Muslims. Now, if they were all violent, really, it wouldn't be nobody left on the planet, really.
That's right.
That says the nature of Islam is peace. Islam means peace. It means to surrender to peace. Muslim, you hear Salam, Islam, you hear, so it's the same S-L-M, that root means peace, one who's a peacemaker, seeking peace. And we say As-Salam Alaikum, the peace, which is really a name of God. He is the peace, the source of peace. We are obligated to work for peace. So this is the essence of the religion, you see, and its history shows that it's done just that to establish peace. I've been working with Jews, and they've just telling me how Islam protected their grave sites, how Islam stabilized the society during the time of the Moors in Spain. Jews made more progress under Islam. The first city in Islamic history was a city called Medina.
Yes.
Was a city of interfaith. Prophet Muhammad issued standing called the Constitution of Medina that protected the rights of Christians and Jews. Not only protected it, but mandated that they were not to be interfered with and they were to practice their religion the way they have been before he became the leader of the society where they were practicing their religion. And that the Muslims had to protect their places of worship if they couldn't do it for themselves.
I'm going to make a comment, you know, and, you know, I came from Panama to this country. So, almost all of us, except for the American Indians, you know, we're all immigrants. Right. And, the one thing that I was really, really proud of in coming here, because in Panama, mm-hmm. there wasn't a lot of religious freedom to some regard, right? You know, unless you were Catholic, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and so when I came here and I saw that this country was all about religious freedom, I felt good, right? One of the things, though, that I think that has, you know, as I gotten older and became more educated, you know, I realized that the concept of, you know, separation of church and state mm-hmm. is a good thing for me.
Yes.
Right. I think that religion is a personal thing. It's an individual thing. And you should live in a place that promotes the idea that everyone has the right to worship whatever God they want to worship or whatever the case might be. Mm-hmm. Right. Whenever you get religion involved with a government or a state, right, where that becomes the main mm-hmm. issue in terms of governing, right? The history that I've seen is caused problems.
Yes.
You know, what is your take on that?
Well, you're absolutely right. And I think America did have it right because of the issues that they saw in the establishment of religion over the state. Of course, the Protestant movement is what moved it. They protested, and of course, they didn't want to be a part of the colonies anymore.
Yes.
And one of the four freedoms was freedom of religion. That was at the forefront for them to be able to worship God as they choose and the way they've seen it, the independent expression to worship. And that's a fundamental. That's at the core of the religion of Islam. In fact, that's the only reason when you see any kind of war happening in Islamic history, it was only to stop from religious oppression. That's a very clear statement in the history. The prophet would not go to war until God said, now go, because your religion is being oppressed. You can't worship freely. And you only do it until religion is free. Once you can have it, no more fighting.
And so, therefore, you know, because I don't like to use the word terrorist, right? Because, you know, terrorist is a word that folks use. They throw it around, you know, and it means different things to people.
Different people,
right? You know, yeah. But by the end of the day, right, if somebody's doing wrong, right, in the name of a religion, right, that in fact the religion does not talk about.
That's right.
Doing that those types of wrongs, all they're doing is basically, you know, using the religion in ways that it wasn't meant to be used.
Yes.
And I think that's what has happened, you know. And listen, that's not just with Muslims. I mean, the Crusades right. were about, you know, Catholicism yes. Yes. trying to be spread yes. throughout yes. Europe, yes. you know. So this is not the first time that has happened.
That's right.
You know what I mean? You know, but so let me ask, where do we go from here? What does America have to do with your help and other religious leaders to get us to a place, you know, where people are not afraid to go to their mosque, to go to their synagogue, to go to their church without worrying about being discriminated against. Because that's real.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, where do we go?
Yeah, well, what America has to do is do just what they put in the Constitution and in the amendments. You know, they guarantee freedom of religion. And we know that F.D. Roosevelt even made a statement to the Congress session that second freedom has to be protected. And right now, we don't have those who are in leadership position in the Congress. Like you say, we are hearing statements from those who are running for office. This is running for the leadership, and they having their influential. So if they are not standing upon what America has, this is the best expression of our life, the best aspirations, where we would see those in our founding fathers of this great nation right here, and in the documents, you know, that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, and among them life, liberty, freedom, you know, and the pursuit of happiness. They are outside of the promise and the document that we've inscribed for ourselves. If we can come back to that, and we, in fact, I'm glad you asked the question, just recently in Washington, D.C., at the National Cathedral, we just had Jews, Muslims, Christians, national and international leaders to come together and have a program at the National Cathedral, which is historic in itself, at that great cathedral. And then we signed a pledge to do everything we can to reject bigotry, racism, stereotypes, and we were asking not just religious leaders, but also public leaders to do the same, to sign that statement that they would stand against it. These are the kind of stance we need to take right now, because it's very important. Look, we wouldn't have won the war when Pearl Harbor case happened if we hadn't employed the Japanese. And there are many wars we can go, even with African Americans, they hadn't been able to help to fight with the Civil War.
That's right.
It shows how we're stronger when we embrace our diversity.
Yes.
You see, I was in the military when 9/11 hit. And I tell you, I worked beside nationals, foreign nationals, who were from the Middle East. And we were saving lives. I was in a department that we were actually saving lives. But when that hit, raghead start coming up, the young ones, you know, who didn't know. And that began to affect their performance. Mm. And there was a case, I can't get specific right now, but you'll probably know, but there was a time the Marines were getting ready to cross a bridge. And we had intel. And if that intel wasn't passed, it was an ambush waiting on them, and they would have been killed. So that, I think part of that was on the news, something happened. But it was a foreign national that had the intel. Mm. And it was at a point where he wasn't going to come up because he was made to feel uncomfortable in the work environment. He couldn't perform to his best. And him and there were others. And there was, remember, so I was very active at that time, and the commander asked me to do something to bring the synergy back. And so one of the things I did during that time was I went and found maybe 25 different cases where Muslims have been engaged and at the height and helping the nation. In fact, at that time, the top doctor for President Bush was a Muslim. Mm. That's one of the things I use. And I did an education series. And once I began to show, and then because myself and there are others who have done outstanding things, and that was just the tip of the iceberg I was showing. There was many more. I just wanted them to see that tip of the iceberg, and that began to calm things down.
Well, brother, it's Ali Sharif, president and imam of the nation's mosque. I want to thank you for coming. We really appreciate you coming. You know, it's been a great education. I've been inspired. I hope the rest of my audience has been inspired too. I'm quite sure they have. You know, and I think that, like you mentioned earlier, education is what freedom is all about. And you know, and once you're educated to certain issues like this one, then you can make a more sane decision. Yes. About how you operate and how you treat people. Thank you so much for coming, my brother.
You're welcome. It's an honor to be on WYBC.
Juan Castillo with you. This is the Electric Drum right here on 94.3 WYBC.
Live Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why Mylowe's Rewards members get a free Valspar paint or exterior stain sample to test your look to confidently refresh your space. Offer valid in-store only 87 to 820. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken in time of purchase. See associate for details. Rewards program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.